Coming to you live from not my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast, and now here's the guy who's so excited to be back podcasting The Amazing Race. I just might pee my pants. I'm Rob Sestrino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another special edition of the podcast. And first off, I'm very excited to be back talking with Jessica Lease. Jessica, how are you?
I'm great, Rob. I'm very happy to be rejoining you.
Very happy to have you back. I wish it was under better circumstances. Let me update everybody on what's going on my end. First, nothing serious, but the very first world problem, but the power has been out at my house the entire day today from when I was supposed to have Aris come over to do a Survivor podcast. We had to go to a, very crude measures to record a podcast. I had to record it with batteries. But now here I am talking to Jess. I am currently parked on the side of the road in my car at a place in the neighborhood where I thought I could get some good 4G reception. I am tethering to a laptop and talking to you from a parked car.
So I'm hoping the cops don't get called on you.
Yes, my wife did warn me that this was a real possibility it would happen. I don't think I'm breaking a law here.
No, but you're suspicious.
I'm suspicious. Yeah, I look like I'm sort of like eavesdropping on somebody's house with like headphones and a laptop, like in a parked vehicle, outside of somebody's house.
Yeah. And, someone's going to see something and then they're going to say something.
Yes, if someone sees something, they most certainly will say something, that there have been some cars that have certainly slowed down to look at what I'm doing. But these are the lengths that I will go to for The Amazing Race. And the best part of this is if anybody can hear this, it means it worked.
That's fantastic. Never let it be said that you do not suffer for your art, Rob.
Yes, I try to make it happen. And believe me, I have been miserable the entire day today. I really I'm happy to talk about The Amazing Race and have a distraction from all of the food in my refrigerator that I'm going to have to throw out. So did I mention I went to the grocery store this morning? Also, it's really not a great day, but the bright side is we can talk about some more Amazing Race Perfect Strangers.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah,
I'm very excited to be back talking about Amazing Race, even if it's under less than ideal circumstances.
Under less than ideal circumstances. Jess, you missed such a great 2-hour episode last week. Sometimes the double episode of The Amazing Race, not that they do that many, but I was like, oh, that's a lot. But I really, those 2 hours flew by. This week, I feel like that everybody got along, even Vank and Ashton in their final moments on the race seemed like that they were perfectly on the same page.
Well, I would say everybody got along with their partner, but
right.
I would say not everybody got along with everybody else.
Yes, like Vank and Ashton were like the scapegoat of everybody's animosity. It's like, hey, everybody, get along with your partner. Let's just gang up on Vank and Ashton.
Yeah, well, you know how that is. Like, if everybody is united against a common enemy.
Yeah. I don't know. It was everybody seemed to just all of a sudden hate them. And I always thought, Jess, that people didn't like Ashton, but I was getting the sense that people don't like Vank.
Well, this is tricky. I think it's really, really hard to tell what exactly went on and what exactly was motivating all of this. And, I tweeted this out last night and I had a bunch of people like tweeting back at me. Well, duh, they said they were annoying. Weren't you paying attention? And it's like, OK, yeah, they may have been a little annoying, but I don't think we really did see anything that would have suggested that these are people that are so awful that everybody else is going to unite to get them out.
Jess, I didn't get at all this season that anybody had beef with Vank.
Yeah, and Vank was even wearing the quiche hat.
He wore the quiche hat. Why is he wearing the quiche hat if they don't like him? That quiche means good.
Yeah, quiche means good. And, why was Scott pretending he didn't know him if he liked him well enough to wear the quiche hat?
Yeah, everybody was so down on Vank. I just thought it was an Ashton thing. I thought there was like some sort of friction between Ashton and Brooke. But all of a sudden, they're like the most hated team. Also, Vank and Ashton were like pretty invisible for a last place team. It was just like, we're just not going to show. I don't know where they got double U-turned, But if they didn't get double U-turn, they were still going to be last by a mile this week.
That seems about right. And, you know, the Amazing Grace did that thing where it's like, maybe if you forget there's a team that's really far behind everybody else, you might still feel like there's some suspense somewhere in this race.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk through this leg, which sent the teams to Italy. And just I feel like this doesn't always come across on The Amazing Race, but Italy looked gorgeous in this episode.
Definitely. Italy looked like a place you'd want to visit.
Yes. Yes. I don't want to travel many places, but that is one on my bucket list.
It was like they hit all the high points, you know. Italy has great food. We got to see all the great food. It's one of the few like reality show food challenges that made me hungry.
Yeah, Jess, I was waiting for one of the teams to say that, to complain that they had to do the task again and be like, oh, I have to eat again. I'm so full. I was prepared to go nuts. Nobody said it.
Nobody said it. Everybody was like, oh, well, oh, darn, got to eat again.
Yeah. Okay. So let's start to talk through the leg. The teams had a interesting wrinkle, Jess. Instead of going to an airport or a travel agency, as we've seen over 29 seasons of The Amazing Race, the teams got to book their flights using the Travelocity app.
Yeah, it didn't seem like the app was that helpful because they all end up on the same flight.
Jess, has the essence of The Amazing Race been completely lost as teams sit around the smartphone and book flights on an app?
Well, honestly, Rob, this is not the first time we've seen this. So I'm not mad at it. You know, we are well past the days where there was a lot of scrambling in the airport to try to get on a great flight and get in ahead of the other teams. Like, that's just not a reality of the race anymore. And they've always had those scenes where the teams will hop onto Travelocity and check out, like, either book tickets for their next flight or like check out the reward they just won or something. Like, product placement is a necessary evil. That's how they keep the lights on, right?
Yes, I guess so. And it was a lot of, boy, this app made it so easy to book these flights.
So easy to book this flight that was spoon-fed to us that we yes. could have booked literally any other way in the world. But now, this is the way things are.
Jess, after it was a keep racing leg, does this really take all of the juice out of keep racing when we're all going to be on the same flight that we're going to book on this app?
It does seem to sap a little bit out of it, but, you know, on the other hand, it's not the worst offender. Okay. I would say anytime you have one of these, it's the middle of the night and everybody has to grab a departure time for the next morning. So you don't end up with one team like getting really far ahead of the other teams. I don't love that either.
Okay, well, we'll get to the steamship coming up in a little bit. We also picked things up with Mike and Liz, who had a lot of drama last week, as I talked about with Mike Bloom in the two-part episode. And Phil tries to do some relationship counseling with them. He tells them, okay, now be sure to make compromises this time.
Yeah, Phil seems to... This is like the first time that I've seen Phil inserting himself into the drama all season yeah. long. And, you know, he took a long break from that after the blind date season. So maybe he's starting to come back around to having some personal involvement.
But I feel like in the blind date season, he was like, so are you guys going to get married? Where this is a little bit like, OK, now remember to listen to each other and try to get along.
Be nice. Play fair.
Yeah. Like Colleen Haskell once.
Exactly.
Said. Yeah. So I like that Phil is trying to at least take a page out of the Jeff Probst book here.
Well, it's better than I think Phil has a harder time than Jeff Probst with this because Phil has a hard time disguising his contempt. Mm-hmm. Whenever teams have kind of exploded in front of him before, you see him get this look on his face, and I call it the disappointed dad look. And yeah. and he looks at them and he'll say something like, "Don't you think you owe your partner an apology?"
Yeah. Don't you think you're better than this?
And it's like, oh, you disappointed Phil. Like, that's uncomfortable.
Not good. Not good. So all the teams had to head to a train to then after they what was it? The train? What was first? The train or the plane?
They had to get the train to the airport.
Train to the airport. And then They went down to Milan. W-turn coming up in this leg, Jess.
Yep. And it's another W-turn placed in the wrong, at the wrong place.
Okay, well, we'll get to the placement, but everybody on the same page, priority number one, U-turn, Vank, and Ashton.
Yep, I'm not sure. I mean, I have to think that it's just one of these sort of mob mentality things where you know that if all the other teams are picking on one team, then at least nobody is talking about you turning you, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. The Sandra Diaz Twine strategy of U-turns. Jess, now in this Perfect Strangers season, do you feel like that there is more intermingling between these teams? It does seem like all of a sudden everybody is really lovey-dovey and on the same page.
Yeah, it seems like, well, you're all in it together, right? So it's a real bonding experience. Whereas I think, you know, the thing they screwed up with the blind date season was that half the teams consisted of people that already knew each other.
Right.
And then half the teams were strangers. So it didn't kind of foster the sense that everybody was doing the same thing.
The luckiest person on this season is Brooke, because that she was so lucky that she ended up getting probably the most social player out of any of the other partners in Scott. And somehow Scott being friendly with everybody is able to counterbalance Brooke.
Yeah, I think it's really kind of crazy how well matched they seem to be.
Yeah, but I saw Brooke happy for the first time in this leg when she was seeing that it was going to be Vank and Ashton U-turn. I think that's the first time we saw her smiling.
Yeah, Brooke had a very good week this week. I was impressed with her all around, and
she did have a meltdown, but she came back from it.
Yeah, she came back. She's finding her footing, you know. You know, even Haley wasn't melting down 24/7, right?
Yeah, but my point is just that Scott is really good, and we saw Brooke and Scott get into this a little bit earlier in the season, where she was mad when Scott gave the extra key to Becca. She's like, why did you do that? And he's like, no, it's good for people to owe us a favor, something that we've talked about for a long time. And I think that he is really, I think, the mayor of all these teams.
He seems to be a very social player. That's definitely true.
Yeah, as evidenced by the quiche hat being passed around all season.
The quiche hat is certainly making the rounds. And the hat he's wearing, I think, like, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that hat originated on Becca.
Oh, he's got the Becca team fun hat?
He has a rainbow hat that he was wearing this episode, and I think that hat came from Becca.
Okay. Vank wears the quiche hat. Do we know if the quiche hat has been eliminated now with Vank? Does he wear it to Elimination Station?
I did get confirmation. Scott confirmed on Twitter that the quiche hat did indeed exit the race with Vank.
Oh, see, if you're going to double U-turn somebody, you don't give them the quiche hat.
I don't know if that's in the JL rules, but yeah, you
that's
definitely
a party foul.
Don't give your hat to someone and then you turn them out of the game if you ever want to see that hat again. So,
right. Like, this isn't a spoiler or anything like that, but this week on Survivor, Sarah Lucina is wearing Zeke's jacket everywhere. I'm like, well, you know, Zeke's not going to vote her out this week because he doesn't want to lose the jacket.
It would be pretty great if someone got voted out and then as their torch is being snuffed, you hear someone yelling, I want my jacket back.
Yeah. And just a inside baseball Survivor story. When Christy Smith got voted out in Survivor the Amazon, she didn't bring her jacket. And then we were all pumped up. And then production took her jacket and gave it back to her. She was mad.
Oh, that's annoying.
Yeah. I was like, hey, to the victor goes the spoils on the jacket.
No kidding. I mean, did that jacket fit you?
It was a raincoat. You would have worn it. It's Survivor.
I know, but did it fit you?
I don't know. I never got to try it on. I think actually we had it as part of the, we put it as part of the roof of the shelter, but that's neither here nor there.
Okay. Anyway, I think what we've established is that giving someone your hat and then having them exit the race with your hat is definitely not quiche.
Right. And I wonder if we'll get some sort of Scott Jonathan Penner moment of I'd like to get my hat back, please.
Right. Or you could get one of these like Vanuatu Final Tribal Council moments of someone bringing the hat back ceremonially. Like maybe it's waiting for him on the final mat.
Yes, some breaking news are happening now. According from a text from my wife, the power is back at my house. I will keep you updated if this is just a false flag or if it goes back out. But we are committed to the car cast right now.
All right. Well, we'll keep cruising along with the car cast.
Okay. All right. So we end up that we have a roadblock, and the roadblock is going to be involving the task of riding a tram and eating pasta. Jess, does the tram restaurant sound practical to you?
I don't know if it sounds practical. It certainly sounds fun. And it echoes maybe one of my favorite all-time challenges, going all the way back to season 18 in Amazing Race Unfinished Business. We had a task very, very similar to this on a Ferris wheel.
Okay. Did they serve food and drink?
Yes, they served food and drink. You had to ride on the Ferris wheel. There was not another task involved, but you had to eat the entire meal before the Ferris wheel finished going all the way around.
Okay. Jess, does the idea of wine in wine glasses seem practical on a moving vehicle?
Well, I think if you're careful enough, I mean, you've consumed beverages on an airplane, right? Same thing.
Yeah, but Jess, you're a mom. Don't you think that they should be serving wine in a sippy cup on the tram?
That's a good point. They do at the theater.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess the tram, because it's on a track, does it not stop short? Is it like a smooth ride?
They probably have all of this figured out, Rob. They're smarter than we are.
I guess so. I guess. And how do they make the food? Is it just like an airplane where they're just heating stuff up? Or is there a guy in the kitchen on the tram? I had so many questions about the tram restaurant.
Well, it's funny you should ask that, Rob, because I had many of the same questions. And I did look this up today.
Okay. What did you find out?
I did some investigative work, and there actually is a full kitchen on the tram itself. It's not a very big kitchen, so they have a very limited menu. There's really, you can choose from, like, they have a prefix menu and you can choose like one of four things. There's like a fish and a meat and a vegetarian and something else. And then you just get like those four things like adjusted for your dietary preferences. And the whole thing costs €70.
Okay. What's the conversion on that?
I'm not sure how the euro is trading right about now, but that's anywhere from like $80 to $100.
Okay. All right. Well, the teams were racing around Milan and they were eating their meals as they were looking for signs. We were looking for Chernobyl, Concordia, and Lago were the spots we were looking for. It seemed as though it was not so tough for Tara and Mike, but somehow the other tram had a lot of difficulty with sign number 3.
Well, it looked like Tara and Mike from the outset decided they were going to work together, which when you have a task like this and you're in that position in the race, that's exactly how you want to play it, because you both have to come up with the exact same thing. If you're helping someone else out, it's not taking away from your race. And you're out in front, so you're not in danger of getting eliminated. Plus, if you really think about this logically, they landed in Milan at 11:30 at night. It's probably 1 a.m. around this point where they're on this tram going around. They have to assume that the next thing they're going to do when they get off this tram is go somewhere for the night and get a departure time. So there's really no downside to working together with someone in this circumstance.
Yeah. Well, Jess, you would be that confident in terms of knowing the race, in terms of that was what was going to happen next?
They very rarely do a nighttime leg. And when they do, it's usually a pretty special thing. Like they will go somewhere where it's known for the nightlife, or they'll have something set up. And in this case, it really, you could make an educated guess that you were going to be going somewhere for a departure time the next morning and to go on for your tasks at that point.
Yeah. I mean, was it back in Dubai where we saw the nightclub bartending task?
That was Malaysia, I think.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry.
This was the,
with all due respect for the Amazing Race 24.
So it was Luke dropping the glasses on the ground and the DJ task. Yeah, that was Malaysia. That was Kuala Lumpur.
Wow. Good memory on you, Jess.
That's what you, that's why you pay me the big bucks, Rob.
Yeah, that's right. All right. So going in the big euros. Yes. So Logan could not get on the tram. Why were only four teams allowed on the tram, Jess?
Because if you look at the layout of the tram, which I did because I'm a nerd, it's a certain width, and they needed the racers to do this task. The racers needed to be sitting on the right side of the tram facing the right way so that they could see out and spot the signs. And
yes,
there are only four seats that fit that description.
That's a good point. Good call by you. So the teams all where it was Floyd, it was Scott, it was Redmond, it was Vank that were all on the second tram. They all missed it. Everybody is wrong. All four of them.
And they didn't work together the first time around.
They didn't work together. But Scott, he was also like holding an answer. Nukes? That's where he thought he was going. What's that? Nukes?
He saw a random sign. It was probably red and yellow, and it probably said nukes. And nobody had any way of knowing that these three words they were looking for were kind of a connecting theme. Because you had Chernobyl, the village they're going to next. You had Concordia, the name of the boat they're going to be on, and you had Lago, the name of the body of water you're going to be in the boat on.
Yeah. And I think that Lago might have been the first one also. I think that the other ones were maybe more visible, and I think that based on what it looked like to me, I think that Lago might have been first. I think that was also the hardest one to see.
Well, the editing was kind of tricky that way. It looked like Tara and Mike found that one last, but you never know how they're going to shuffle that up in the editing. So,
yeah,
I don't.
Jess, something else I want to say about Scott that I noticed in this episode. He gives a good Jim Halpern face.
He does. And I think you really have to if your partner is someone like Brooke.
Yes, but even without Brooke in this episode, that he did it a couple times while he was trying to write down the names of the cities. He did a good job with that. And I think that he is really gives some very funny reactions, Scott.
Yeah, I like Scott quite a bit. Like, I didn't warm up to him immediately, but he's really growing on me. Like, just the way that he handles everything that's coming at him. I'm not even going to say that it's that he's positive, which I'm sure he is, but it's just, he doesn't let things get to him, but there's like kind of a sardonic edge to how he copes with it as well. That's very endearing. Yes.
Especially in dealing with Brooke.
Especially in dealing with Brooke.
Yeah. Jess, when Vank gave his answers, did he say Chernobyl? Did you write that down?
It sounded like he said Chernobyl.
The guy gave it to him, but I don't know. I mean, Vank and Ashton had their own problems all throughout this episode, so he didn't need that guy nitpicking, but I'm pretty sure he said Chernobyl.
Yeah, well, and not to break the fourth wall here a little bit, but I really felt like, you know, we've heard from racers before that the way these tasks work is the judge really isn't judging your performance on the task. The judge is looking to a producer off camera who says whether or not they've passed the task. And I felt like nowhere right. was this ever more apparent than it was with this guy who like couldn't look forward to save his life. Like every right. single and time someone gave him an answer, he's looking off camera and he's like, oh, yeah. Okay. Yes, you got it.
Yeah. It's like, we got a steamship to catch. Okay. Everybody's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So all the teams eventually make it to the steamship. It was like a banquet, Jess.
It was. And interestingly enough, like I don't know why I did this morning, but I had some time to kill. We were waiting for the housekeeper to come in, and I was just sitting here with the baby, and we were waiting to leave the apartment. So I started looking this stuff up, and I looked up the steamship. And
yeah.
This was something that they did, especially for the racers. This is not like an overnight cruise you can book, unfortunately.
Right, right. It definitely seemed like they held up. They waited for anybody. Like if Lolo needed to go around again on the tram, it wasn't like that there was any danger of being in the S&S Express situation where they would miss the steamship. They were going to wait, right?
They were going to wait. And it was really only a couple of hours to get where they were going.
Yeah. Just then the teams had to grab departure times and tell me, Does this happen a lot on The Amazing Race where you just have like arbitrary times of like, okay, you can't get off the boat until 7:30? Like, I understand when it's like an appointment and you have to check in. There's only one person can go hang gliding on a time. You grab your check in. But is this often where it's just like there's like, okay, now you can go?
Yeah, I think it's staggered start times. It's like when you run a 5K race and they like stick you in a corral. And they've done this a lot more often, especially in recent years, to kind of alleviate the bunching aspect of it. Because, you know, that's something people do complain about. And I can see both sides of it. I can see where it's really annoying when everybody gets like bunched up in one place and there's hours of operation and they can all take off at once. But the departure times are something I think we're seeing a lot more of that, just because that bunches the teams together. So it's easier from a production standpoint, but you don't totally penalize somebody who's might have started out way out in front. They still get a little bit of a lead.
Okay, Jess. So Tara and Joey are the first to arrive at the U-turn. Now, they have been U-turners earlier this season, but this time they said, we don't want to be the bad guy. We don't want to be the team that's U-turning everybody. Did you feel like was this just a change of attitude, or do you like this as a smart strategic decision of not being the heavy here?
The funny thing is they regretted it later. Like they were saying on social media today that they wish they had used the U-turn. And I think that's bananas. I think that's totally bananas.
Why? Talk it through.
Because there was no reason for them to use the U-turn other than to kind of get some curry some favor in the social game, I guess. But they're way out in front. You know, there was a little bit of bunching at the beginning of this leg, but they know that everybody is out to U-turn Vank and Ashton. They know Vank and Ashton are near the back of the pack. They know Vank and Ashton are probably getting U-turned with or without them. There's really no reason for them to stick their necks out here.
But, I mean, your rules of the U-turn are, if you know you're not going to see a team again, why not use the U-turn? If everybody's going to appreciate that you were the ones that did it, what was the downside?
No, you're flipping that around, Rob. What I say is, don't U-turn a team if you think there's a chance you will see them again.
Yeah.
So, right, there may not have been anything to lose with them using the U-turn, but they didn't have to. Like, it wasn't going to affect their race either way.
Okay. Yeah, I just felt like it was a little bit like, okay, well, now morally we're superior to using the, you know, we're not doing it here, but kind of feel like that once you've already, you know, crossed that bridge, I don't know necessarily. I think it's just a little ticky-tack to say, no, now we don't want to do it.
Yeah, I mean, your hands are already dirty, but maybe you don't want to be the guy that does the U-turning.
The hatchet people.
Yeah, like you spend the whole rest of the race. And granted, nobody ever has to vote for you for anything, so you can kind of be as much of a jerk as you want. But
right,
you don't want to be, oh, there's the guys that do the U-turning.
Yes. I mean, do you think it sort of like creates a narrative? The third U-turn that comes up, it's like, well, they, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Let's U-turn Tara and Joey here. They U-turn everybody else.
Oh, sure. And like now that Vank and Ashton are gone, who are they going to turn on next? Like, who is the, you know, who's the whipping boy now?
Yeah. Okay, so we end up with our detour, make a mold or grab a hold. Jess, really feels like that the Amazing Race is trying to go for a five-hole task for Becca. I mean, we had a climbing task on the previous leg. We're going to have a mountain climbing task here. I don't recall this much mountain climbing in the Amazing Race.
Well, there's always an element of like the adrenaline-y kind of like extreme sports type of tasks where,
I mean, we also had the window washing on this season as well.
You also had several people admit they were afraid of heights. So I don't think they were necessarily trying to get Becca to five hole as much as they were trying to get Scott to pee his pants.
No, that was a leg already where Tara was going to pee her pants.
That's true. And, we had Sarah was going to poop herself. So lots of bodily functions this season.
That's how exciting this Amazing Race is. Everybody's just losing control of their bodily functions. OK, so we ended up with Tara and Joey. They ended up going to make a mold, which in hindsight really does look to be the much more time consuming task.
It's true. It's kind of one of the detour halves that they just put there because it looks kind of cool. And it's like, this is the wuss task. If you don't want to do the cool one that looks awesome on camera, you can go play arts and crafts.
All right. Liz and Michael, they're on the same page now. They get to the U-turn and they say, okay, that's going to be it for Vank and Ashton. And really, you know, at that point, Vank and Ashton, it's game over.
At that point, you could just turn it off. You know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Because Vank and Ashton aren't even going to get to the U-turn marker for like another 15 minutes in the episode.
Yeah. And this is kind of why I don't feel as bad for Vank and Ashton as I might otherwise.
Right.
Like if it was going to be close, then okay. But they really, that U-turn doesn't happen. I think we still get the same outcome.
Jess, talk to me, though, about the placement. You said you didn't like where this was. Again, this is the same thing where you feel like it should have been after you do the detour.
Well, I feel from a game design standpoint, and, you know, maybe this is controversial because I did have a couple of people ding me for this last time. They're like, this is not the first time they've put the U-turn before the detour. But I think there's really only one correct placement of the U-turn from a game design standpoint. And that is you want a detour at the beginning of the leg and you want a roadblock after the U-turn so that any team that gets U-turned is going to have some time to make up the task. Like,
okay,
this time, whoever you put on that U-turn board, you are screwing them hard because you are basically, not only is it not a blind U-turn, so you can immediately break the U-turn by U-turning someone that you know has already been there, but there's no chance for them to make up any time after they finish completing both halves of the detour. And I really think there needs to be at least one task. Maybe it doesn't even have to be a roadblock. It just like some kind of skill-based route marker after they finish the U-turn that gives them a chance for another team to screw up and for them to make up some time. And we didn't have that.
Yeah, you make all good points. I mean, the only way that it could have happened where is you had like a team like what we saw with Matt and Redmond earlier this season, where they just blew through the other two tasks. And this was with a second team U-turn. But you get the sense that they could have done both of the tasks faster than Vank and Ashton were able to do even one.
Yeah, I think they probably could have.
They probably would have beat them even if there wasn't a U-turn. But yeah, we'll discuss more the sad tale of Vank and Ashton as we get toward the end. So Becca and Floyd are going to go rock climbing. She asks Floyd, have you ever belayed before? Just what's belaying?
Okay. So this is actually, Rob, this is probably going to answer a lot of the other questions that you may be having as we move further into this task. But to belay someone is to stand on the ground while they are climbing and you are tethered to them by a rope and you are basically serving as a counterbalance for them if something happens. Like if they fall, they have someone that is counterbalancing them so that they will not just plummet to their death.
Yeah. Jess, tell me if I've also heard this word thrown around in Star Trek. I feel like that there's like scenarios where there's like some sort of like rogue admiral or like Worf has gone off the deep end and he's like telling somebody like, lock them up. And then somebody else might say, Picard might say, belay that order.
Right, right. So you are.
That's the same thing, the same context. Like holding something.
Yeah, I think that's kind of I'm going to go with it. That sounds right to me. I'm not sure.
Is that what they're saying? Or they're saying delay that order and like do it later. No, because he doesn't want it to happen at all, Picard.
Right. Belay that order is hold it so that it doesn't fall.
That's Star Trek for hold up, bro.
Yeah, I think that's a military term as well as in the context of rock climbing. It's basically serving as a counterweight so that the person climbing doesn't just immediately collapse to their doom.
Okay.
And this is why the team members that did the climbing in this task were the team members, generally speaking, who were the lighter ones.
Right.
Because if you have a person who is 100 pounds lighter than you and you are belaying a much heavier person, that person falls, you're just going to get yanked up into the air when they fall because of physics. Right.
So Becca got belayed by Floyd in this episode.
And I think Becca and Floyd are kind of a similar size, but Becca rightly points out she does this 5 days a week and she's a very good climber. So belaying is really the easier task.
If you could get belayed 5 days a week, you take that.
That's true. Like some people
meter all the way over to the right.
Some people search their whole lives trying to get belayed.
It's very tough. It's very tough. Okay, so Brooke and Scott are headed over to go and climb as well. Brooke wants to do it. Brooke, are her eyes bigger than her stomach on this task, Jess?
I think Brooke kind of has to do it.
Yeah, Jess, she was just like talking herself into it.
Right. And I think from a couple of different standpoints, like Brooke should do it because Scott's afraid of heights. And also Scott's
not
much
anymore.
Bigger.
He's over it. He's over it now.
She cured him.
Yeah. She fixed him.
She fixed it. But not only that, like give the guy a break. He's done a couple of heights tasks, but also he's much heavier than she is. And I think if he were climbing and she were belaying and he fell, she would get yanked up into the air.
Yeah. Okay. Meanwhile, over at the castle, Tara and Joey, they were making the ghosts. Jess, did you think that this castle needed any more creepy ghosts?
I think the more creepy ghosts, the merrier.
Oh, you like that?
I like the creepy ghosts.
Yeah.
I mean, what can I say about this task? It was kind of ridiculous, but also moderately entertaining that one of the team members had to just like sit there and get covered in plaster.
Yes. Yeah, it was something that looked cool, but it was kind of boring to watch people do.
I mean, not to get ahead of ourselves, but it's like Logan was made for this task.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So really the one piece of real drama that we got in this episode was we got to see Brooke and Scott working on the mountain climbing task. They were going at the same time as Matt and Liz, which I think that was also getting in Brooke's head as Liz was doing really well going up. And I think that was sort of psyching her out a little bit.
Yeah, I think anytime there's that kind of energy coming from somewhere else, I think it can kind of mess with your game.
Yeah. All right. So Brooke was really, I don't know what she wanted Scott to do. Like this was like Shades of the Ladle again, where she's the one doing things and then is like yelling at Scott to like help her when there's really nothing he can do.
Well, she said something I thought was really, really interesting when she was getting suited up for this. She said, "I'm not scared of heights. I'm scared that I won't be able to do it." And I think that that says a lot about Brooke in that moment, because I think what I'm hearing from her is that she's not necessarily afraid of anything except her own incompetence. And she's very acutely aware that like hundreds of thousands of people or, you know, tens of people in the Thursday night time slot are going to watch her.
Yeah.
And she's going to come off looking like a jackass on national television if she can't finish the task. And she's going to end up like, I think if you're a super fan of The Amazing Race, you got to think back to, I don't want to be the person that was pushing the hay bales for 9 hours. Like, what if I can't do this task so colossally that it becomes a meme?
Right. You think that was what was going through Brooke's head? I don't want to be a meme.
That's my speculation. And of course, I could be way off base. You know, there's many things we don't see, but that I thought that statement was very telling. She's afraid she won't be able to do it. And
yeah,
not only do you risk becoming a meme, but you let your partner down. You don't win $1 million. You go home in disgrace.
Not quiche.
Not quiche.
Yeah. Brooke also said that she doesn't think Scott has her.
Well, that's also interesting. I think that's tough when you have to put your life into the hands of someone that you met a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
There's that element of it, too. But I think that's also just kind of Brooke's own brand of hysteria.
Yeah. And I liked when she was like all the way up the mountain and she's like, what do I do next? What do I grab onto? I was like, you have to look. I can't see up there. It's really far away.
Yeah, look for something to put your hand on.
Yes, yes. That
and then
be
go
good.
Up higher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder how I would do it, something like that. I feel like I don't think I'm necessarily scared of heights, but I don't know if I could potentially do something like that.
I mean, it's hard to tell. I've done a little rock climbing, and I'm not sure I've done something quite that complicated, but, you know, in the moment, it can be very tough to really understand what you want to do, especially if you feel like you need to execute it perfectly or risk being a laughingstock.
Right. Jess, meanwhile, there's a foot race for number one, which turns into a boat race for number one between Becca and Floyd and Redmond and Matt.
Those are great boats. That looks fun.
Yes. Just looks like something out of a James Bond movie.
It really did.
And it turns out that Team Fun had a better boat parker.
It seemed like there were some spatial relations going on there. Like they needed to figure out where they were relative to where Phil was. And I think there was a problem solving element that they got a little bit quicker than Matt and Redmond did.
Okay. Becca and Floyd, they race to the mat and they win a trip for two to Argentina for Team Fun.
One of my favorite places. I hope they have fun. Yes. And it seems like of all the teams out there, they might actually take this trip together. And that'd be pretty cool. I hope they film it.
Okay. We'll see what happens there. Matt and Redmond are two. They say they need to just tighten some things up in their game. What do you think about that self-assessment for Matt and Redmond?
Oh, I think that's fair. But I also think Matt and Redmond are one of those teams that really, we haven't seen this. This was something that happened a lot in really early seasons of the show. But you get teams that are just kind of laser focused on needing to win every leg and feeling like that's how you define success on this show, when you and I know that's not really it. And I think Matt and Redmond kind of feel like if they don't win the leg, they are not winning the race.
Right, right. Okay, let's get back to we need Brooke and Scott. They get done finally. Brooke is told that it's just like pushing a baby out. That was Scott's line, correct? I want to attribute that to him.
That was Scott's line.
Yes, Jess.
It is
in
not.
In any way. No.
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 It is really, really not.
What's the biggest difference?
Oh, there are so many.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Well, maybe one day we can get more into that.
It's a roadblock I'm never taking again.
Yes. Yes. A double U-turn, even.
Yeah, if someone U-turns me, I'm like, at that point, nope.
No. Okay, speaking of double U-turn, let's check back in with Vank and Ashton, who have not yet completed either task, as many of the teams are checking in. Ashton is going to climb the wall. We get the thing where, Jess, we need to come up with a name for this before the Amazing Race is maybe done, where the team who ends up, they're in last place, but we get sort of like the power montage, like the feel-good montage of them completing stuff.
Yeah, we just sort of like, it's sort of like, hey, remember those guys? Yeah, they did all the tasks. And
I remember Joey and Megan, I think the second time this happened to them, where they were just so far back, but they sort of, the show paints it as a triumphant finish.
Yeah. And I think the classic one I always go back to is Uchenna and Joyce in the first All-Stars.
Yes. It's like, we knew that we were done for, but we really worked our tails off that day.
Yes.
We became closer.
Meanwhile, somewhere way back in the pack.
Yes. But Vank and Ashton, I'm really surprised. I thought that they were going to be at each other's throats, because we've seen them certainly, and more Ashton being upset with Vank. That was not a thing. I wonder if everybody hating them on this leg sort of made them closer.
I think it did. I think it sort of brought them together. And also, I think in a weird way, the pressure was off. I mean,
I guess so.
They knew they weren't, you know, there was not going to be a non-elimination leg. I mean, probably not. And
right,
they've been U-turned. Everyone is already ahead of them in the first place. They are not getting out of this. So, I mean, at that point, why not just enjoy the day and try to, you know, find some common ground? And, you know, you're in this beautiful place with this reasonably non-bitchy person, you know, just like kick back, enjoy the ride, do some things you've never done before.
Okay. So we start to see more teams check in, Tara and Joey check in. I like that Phil can see the boat coming, like, oh, look, more teams are coming. Mike and Liz are checking in. They're four. Scott and Brooke are five. Lolo gets the clue after they complete their ghost. And that's really going to be it for Vank and Ashton, who I don't think had completed either of the tasks by then. Lolo is going to check in. We see on the mat where a couple of the teams are there. And they're talking about how if you had a dinner party and you had to invite a bunch of people, there's just some people you don't want to have there, like Vank.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of weird. Like, I mean, you like him enough to give him the quiche hat, for crying out loud.
Yeah. I want to. Who was the person that said that? Was it Mike?
I thought it was Brooke that said that.
No. Well, I didn't like it. I didn't like it. And I like Vank. And I don't know why everybody was like, I can understand. It seems like Ashton might have like been sort of a little bit short with people, but I don't know what did they thought that Vank was sort of just too awkward. I don't understand what it didn't seem like that Vank has a mean bone in his body.
I mean, he got a little like weird and dorky towards the end of the last leg when he's running,
which I find very relatable, Jess.
I know you do, Rob, as yes. Do we all. But when he's running by with the firework and he's like, how's it going, guys?
Maybe when he honked the horn at everybody. Yeah. That might have put everybody over the edge.
And it, like his voice cracking on the how's it going? I was like, okay, maybe I wouldn't invite that guy to my dinner party. But you know what? I changed my mind. You know, now I'm having my Amazing Racer dinner party. Thanks, local. You can come over and have dinner at my house. Open invitation, sure, Vank.
Why not?
Why
come
not?
On over, Vank. Yeah, but everybody was like, lame. When he tried to parallel park. Okay, so maybe that was one sin for Vank. There was also some concern. Was Vank's head too big for the Plaster of Paris?
Oh, I think they made it fit. They made it work somehow. They did their Tim gun. They made it work.
They made it work. All right, and Vank and Ashton, they are the final team to arrive. Luckily, they are able to be spared the embarrassment that Sarah and Shamir had. Phil didn't have to come out to the castle and tell him it was over.
Yeah, I mean, it was still daylight. And, you know, weather was nice. Phil was not going to, he's not going to leave his spot in the park. Like, that was really beautiful.
It was a nice day. And so, unfortunately, Vank and Ashton are done. And we're down to only six teams. Now, Jess, also with Vank and Ashton, I am now officially eliminated from the fantasy draft.
Well, that's good because your team that was effectively six Ashtons was really kicking our asses.
Yes, I thought I had a shot to win this whole thing with six Ashtons.
Yeah, and it was not to be.
No, or six Vanks.
I mean, I have a comfortable lead. Mike is gaining on me and Dan's not far behind. But
yes,
you know, Mike has the most team members actively still in the race. So that could be a factor.
All right, Jess, let's talk about where we go from here. And I'm not talking about destination. We have six teams. It was a real kumbaya week for the teams coming off of last week where everybody was at each other's throats. We lose Vank and Ashton, who were one of the more bickering teams. So I'm sad to see them go. And now I kind of feel like that this is a pretty wide open season of the race moving forward.
It really does feel like it could be anybody's game.
It really could be. I still think that Redmond and Matt are the front runners. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I think Redmond and Matt are doing very well, but I almost see them as like one of those teams that goes out before the finals just because of the kind of edit they're getting.
Right.
Like they've been portrayed as instigators and they're like, you know, there's certain points where you feel like they are miles better than everyone else at this racing stuff. And those are the kind of teams that get taken down by hubris.
I would say that the chief antagonists of them were Vank and Ashton, and they are gone. So they would be leading the charge against Matt and Redmond if there was one. So I don't know who really dislikes Matt and Redmond now.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's gunning for him. Like, nobody ever said that they thought Redmond was out of line on anything he said to Ashton.
Right, right. And Mike and Liz, if they can stay on the same page, they're also a very dangerous team. Do you feel like that they will be able to work out their differences?
Well, I think we've seen Mike and Liz more than any other team that's still left on the board. They have stumbling blocks and they are combustible. Right. I think they are going to need to really watch themselves. And I think they have the capacity to be excellent racers, but they've also had the capacity to drop to the back of the pack in a huge hurry.
Right. They're front runners. Like, when things are going well for Mike and Liz, they're going really well. And then when they hit adversity, things unravel for that team.
And they unravel faster than I think they do for other teams. So right. I think they're an exciting team. I enjoy watching them, especially
high upside.
Yes. Very high upside and
high downside.
They are doing better than I think any of us expected they would do. So they're definitely a team that I can root for, but I think they're also, they've got the most potential to flame out.
Yeah. High flame out potential there. What about Team Fun? How are you feeling about the chance for the dream to be accomplished in Team Fun to win the Amazing Race?
Well, Team Fun has got to be everybody's favorite at this point, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they really are. They really are fun. I mean, what can you say? They've got the best attitude, and I think they're like the fan surrogate, but not in like a weird way. Frequently, when you have somebody who's portrayed as an Amazing Race superfan on the show, there's kind of an off-putting, dorky element to it where you're like, ugh, is that like, you know, is that how people come off when they memorize hours and hours of Amazing Race trivia and like, that guy's a nerd. We don't want him to win. But Floyd and Becca, they're super dorky, but they're having so much fun. You can't help but want them to keep going.
Yeah. Well, they didn't call them Team Fun for nothing, Jess.
Right. And they're total dorks, but I love them. And they're like, I want to hang out with them. I want to, like, you know, get out a big bowl of popcorn and like watch our favorite episodes of the show.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Jess, maybe one day, it might not be a new episode of the show, but maybe one day it could happen.
Maybe they can be guests when we record our Amazing Race Historians.
Yes. Jess, now a couple people have sent us sort of these Amazing Race casting notices, which are going on. Are you any more bullish on a pickup for the Amazing Race and a season 30 based on casting notices?
I wouldn't base my bullishness on casting notices. I mean, it doesn't hurt, but, you know, they cast for everything. What I think is more interesting is that there is a writer's strike looming, and
yes,
the longer that goes on, the more likely they are to fill the schedule with reality TV, including an Amazing Race that's probably already planned out, and they may even have people like on the casting board already.
Yeah, I think that that's your best hope. If you are an Amazing Race fan, I think that you need to, and again, this is a little counterintuitive if you are a general TV fan, but I think you want a writer's strike that goes on for a couple of months into the summer, where the start of the fall season is pushed back enough where Amazing Race is going to be needed to fill a primetime slot where they're going to like be able to do a fall season of the Amazing Race. I think that if you see the writer's strike go into past, and now it's starting in May, I think that all these scripted shows, for the most part, that are on the broadcast networks, they will go back to work in like July and August and start writing shows that you're going to see in September. But if the fall season gets pushed back far enough, then I think that there's a real opening for the Amazing Race.
Yeah, I mean, I'm optimistic. Like, I want it to fit right into that sweet spot. Like, you know, don't be away from the writing desk for much longer than you might have been anyway, but
right,
be away long enough that we get some Amazing Race up in there.
Jess, you could live with a 14-episode season 2 of MacGyver?
I think I wouldn't be sad about that.
A strike-shortened MacGyver run in the fall?
I mean, we all have to make sacrifices, Rob.
Okay. All right. Well, Jess, anything else you want to talk about this week, The Amazing Race? I mean, how many episodes in are we on this Amazing Race? Is this 6 or 7?
This is episode 6.
Six. Okay. Six of, what is it? Is it normally 11 or 12 hours of The Amazing Race?
I think we get 12 this time.
Okay, 12 time. And so that this is the halfway mark then.
It's gone by really fast, hasn't it?
It has gone by very fast. Like, we did have the double episode last week, but yeah. Still enjoying The Perfect Strangers. This was not one of my favorite episodes in terms of nothing super memorable from this time out. But overall, I'm still pretty bullish on this season.
Yeah, it was a little lackluster, but, you know, they can't all be winners. And honestly, I thought the scenery picked up a lot of the slack. Like, I thought it was really beautiful. It made me want to go to Italy right away. And I thought at least the tram task was entertaining.
Mm-hmm. And Jess, do you know where we're headed next?
I think we're staying in Italy next week. It looks like we're heading a little bit south. We're going to Venice.
Molto bene. Right?
That's right.
That's right. Okay. Jess, great job. Do you have a pick for the hashtag?
Oh boy.
How about six Ashtons?
I think six Ashtons is a good winner.
Okay. I didn't bring the bell with me in the car, but otherwise, we would ding it. And so, Jess, we hopefully have did it or have done it, and we will be able to get this podcast uploaded. And this is really, I went back to my roots at the car cast.
Yeah, that's, I mean, at least you're not driving while you're doing this.
No.
You're not Amanda Kimmeling it.
No, but it's good to know that I still have this in me because my wife is always threatening to kick me out. And I say, hey, I got to be in the studio. I got to be podcasting. I'll stay in my room. Just don't make me leave. I'll just stay up here. You won't even know that I'm here. Because sometimes she gets really upset, Jess.
Well, I'm sure she has a good reason.
You would think so. But it's good to know that, you know, if everything goes pear shaped someday, I can still podcast and potentially live out of my car.
Well, you know, plenty of people do that, Rob. You might even look into getting a bigger car so you have more room to stretch out.
Oh, like a podcast van.
Yeah, get like a podcast van and, you know, you're going to want to insulate it. So like no windows on that van, of course.
I like it.
And you're going to want to get like fill your glove compartment up with candy so that you have something to snack on. It's a mobile podcasting van with no windows.
It gets hot in the car, though. It needs like Skittles or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just like drive around the neighborhood, the van full of candy. Nothing could go wrong.
How about a podcast tram?
The podcast tram is kind of on a fixed path, but I dig it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't have anywhere to go. I could just be like, you know, riding around in the podcast tram. Guests get on. We, you know, do an interview. I drop them back off at the start. It's good.
Sort of like comedians in cars getting coffee.
It would be perfect. It would be perfect. And then I could sort of just like naturally end the show. Like, well, I guess this is your stop. So let's wrap things up.
That's amazing. Like podcast tram. I think it's too bad we already picked our hashtag. That would have been a good contender.
Be a good one. All right, Jess. Well, great work once again. You could follow the great Jessica Leese on Twitter at Haymaker Hattie. Anything else going on?
Nothing much going on. I'm covering Amazing Race and Survivor over at previously.tv, and those are always fun recaps to write, and I'm sure also fun to read.
All right. Well, I'm going to hang up and drive on home and see what's going on, and then hopefully be able to upload the rest of this podcast for you guys, okay?
All right, whenever you get your power back, everybody can look forward to that.
All right, everybody. Take care and drive safe. Bye.